That's tough.
How about now? Woo! Teke. All right. I am Adam Skugar, and this is Roy Zisman, and we have the privilege of being here at TechEd to give you a deep dive into work folders. There have been a couple of other mentions of work folders, first in the keynote, then in the people-centric IT overview session, and yesterday our colleagues Nir and Bill presented an overview session. So first, just to check how many people have seen a little bit of work folders, have an idea what you're here for, some hands going up. How many of those were at Nir's session in particular? Okay, not too many. So we want to make sure we get to some of the 300 level content. And to do so, I'm going to go a little quickly in the beginning, but I am going to start from the basics and give you all the context so you won't have missed anything. We also have some demos scattered through the presentation. And for those who did go to Nir's session, you'll see that there's a little bit of repeat. Some of the demo material is the same as you would have seen yesterday. So as a special incentive to those who did attend Nir's session, or maybe it's a reward for attending Nir's session, first person after each demo who can tell me what's different about what we show you today versus what you saw yesterday will get a 12-month Xbox Live Gold subscription on me. Let's start just talking about file servers. They've been around for decades. In fact, file servers are the original server workload. Since then, they've grown exponentially. Every year, exabytes of data are deployed to support information workers on file servers. File servers started as an incredibly simple and efficient way of managing file services, logically enough. They've grown to offer continuous availability and incredible levels of performance while maintaining that simplicity. And a rich ecosystem of tools and utilities has evolved around file servers to help you manage data, to help you protect data, and to help you ultimately to keep in compliance with whatever data requirements your organization has. Times have changed, and this guy is your worst enemy. He will go to extremes to get access to the data that he needs to get his job done from any of his devices, from absolutely anywhere. He also happens to be the CEO. Do you want to tell him he's violating corporate data policies? Yes? Great. Got to volunteer. Do you think he's going to listen? Not at all. So we're introducing work folders. And work folders allows the information worker to access their individual work data. It keeps the data centrally located on a file server, and actually helps you solve a problem that we frequently find when we talk to customers, which is that a lot of really important data sits on the end user device. It sits on the end user device because that's simple for the user to deal with. They don't want to deal with these file shares. They want freedom. With work folders, we give you a simple way of letting the user act the way they want, storing files locally on their devices, while we asynchronously bring that data into a file server and keep it in sync across all of their devices. The devices that we're going to concentrate on. As I walked around at the beginning, I got some questions. Some iPads were waved at me. This is what the executives want. We're obviously going to start with Windows 8.1. And then soon after release, we're going to expand support to Windows 7 because we know that that's probably what's deployed primarily in your organization, and iPads because we know that's what you're being asked for. Now, some of you are looking at their Android phone. We will also pursue support for Android and other operating systems after we get through the first three priorities I described. Accessing your data from wherever you are is very different than what we offer today. For those of you familiar with folder redirection and offline files, Roy was talking to a few people about how they use that in their organizations. You know that not only are you limited to Windows domain joined devices, but you have to have a VPN connection to the network. We're doing away with that requirement with work folders. Access from anywhere means access from anywhere. No hassle for the end user. And we can do all this while helping you make sure that you can comply with the requirements that you have for managing data in your organization, and it's easy for your user to comply without being tempted to work around you. One of the things I just want to cover up front is the difference between different sync solutions that Microsoft now offers. We have SkyDrive, which is a consumer public cloud service. That's not changing. We now have SkyDrive Pro, which works with SharePoint. The SharePoint team recognizes that when you are using their servers or services in Office 365, you need the ability to provide access from anywhere on any device for your employees. We're doing the same for individual user data from file servers. So there's two distinctions. One is that it's a file server, so you should use work folders if you're choosing a file server for your data. And the other is that we don't, in this release, support any kind of collaboration scenarios or synchronization of team shares. Think of this as the new My Documents. Now I'm going to have Roy take us through what's involved with deploying a work folders client.
Thanks, Adam. So for the first demo, I'm going to show you how easy it is to set up work folder from an end user experience. Imagine Paul. He works at Contoso. He's part of the finance department. And he has here on the right the grayish toned PC, a PC that was already configured with work folders for him by his IT administrator through group policy. Paul gets an email from his IT team saying that from now on, he can access his work files from any of his personal devices. So he immediately pulls out his Surface, shown here on the left, and navigates to the work folder settings as described in the email. The first thing that Paul has to provide is his corporate email address. This is being used by the system to actually identify Paul's backend file server. Since this is a non-domain joined device, Paul also has to provide his corporate credentials. Paul can decide where to put the synced files. He'll just use the default by going to under his user profile. And Paul also has to confirm or consent to any policies that his file server administrator had configured for any devices that use this sync functionality. That's it. Instantly, files are getting downloaded to Paul's Surface, and he can access them under his user profile under the work folders directory. Now, since this is Paul's first time in New Orleans, we'd like to make sure he has a list of really good restaurants that he can visit. So one good restaurant is K. Paul's. I don't know if you guys had a chance to be there. Another one is Café du Monde. Does anyone else have a good recommendation for our restaurant here in New Orleans? August? Okay. We'll surely to check that. When the file is saved, it gets synced back to the file server, And from there, it also gets synced back to any of the other devices that Paul has. Here's our restaurants file with the content in it. You saw how simple that was, right?
That is incredible, how easy it is for Paul to get access to his data on his devices really without providing anything but an email address. But what about a device that doesn't support work folders? Can Paul continue to access his data?
Yes, that's a very good question, Adam. You, as the file server admin, if you want to support legacy devices, you can just go back to the file server, create an SMB share that points directly to Paul's file, and that way Paul can access those files with a UNC path. Here's an example. So if Paul has a device that doesn't support work folders, he can just use this UNC path.
Great. Thank you, Roy. So I want to ask you a question. When you deploy work folders on a device, what is it that the device needs in order to contact the work folder server? A connection. And what do you think that connection has to include? Yeah. Yep, jumping ahead to some security things, but fundamentally, you got to find a way to get there. Yeah, exactly. DNS, some kind of discovery. You need a URL. You need to start work folders. If we want employees to be able to set this up for themselves, they're not going to guess the URL of the server. So we have to get a URL to the client. And there's three ways that we let you do that. The first is a manual process, and what Roy showed you was a manual process, where the user just enters their email address, and it's worth noting, the only thing we use the email address for in that case is to construct a URL that is a standard URL for us. So it's workfolders dot whatever the domain was. So just to preempt any thoughts about, is this using Exchange? What if I'm using Office 365? We're not actually doing anything with the email address. The email address is just something the user knows. An alternative is to get a URL to the user, which you can do, and they can manually enter. Second option we have is what we call an opt-in. For any device that you're managing, whether it's a domain-joined device with complete end-to-end management through Configuration Manager, or whether it's a personal device with light management, like Intune or another mobile device management platform, if you have a way of getting the settings to the device, and then the user can choose when they want to opt in on that device. And that's really useful for users that have multiple devices, and they don't want their files on every one of them. You've probably had the experience of walking into a lab, logging into a server, and if you use offline files, those files start syncing into the lab, to that lab machine. With opt-in, the settings can be there, so there's no user configuration. They don't have to go through answering these questions. But you get to choose one. I'm glad you like that feature. Excellent. Yep. So you know what we're trying to solve for here. Yeah. We consider opt-in the default. We think it's a logical place to start. Get the settings deployed. Let the user decide if they want the documents on that device. The final way you can get the URL to the work folders client is mandatory, and that's very much like today's situation, where you get the settings to the client, there is no opt-in, they log in, files start syncing. And in certain cases, that's a perfectly valid, useful configuration, where everybody has one machine, for example, they're all domain-joined machines, or that's the kind of situation you'd want to use mandatory. Let's step back from client and look at the overall system view. Work folders is a subrole in the file and storage services role. And Roy's going to show you where that is and how to configure it. We have a question. Go ahead. We can demo the URL method. Why don't we save it for the end and bring me back to it at the very end. and I think we can pull that off as a bonus demo.
Yep.
Okay. So it's a subrole in file and storage services, which provides a new access protocol. Just like we've always had SMB and NFS, we now have a sync protocol. And in Server Manager, you'll get a consolidated view of all sync activity on that server or group of servers. On an individual sync server, you create one or more sync shares. Again, a parallel to what we do in the SMB and NFS world. A sync share points to a physical location where work folders will be stored on the server. It also maps the users and groups that need to be associated with that sync share to give them permission to get to anything on the share. Again, just like it. The critical piece about sync shares is you define additional policies around them. So you can create multiple shares on a single server to have different groups of users syncing with different policies applied to them. And we'll talk about some of those policies a little later. An individual client then sets up what we call a partnership with the sync server. Local changes on the device sync to the server. From the server, syncs to the other devices. So it's always a hub and spoke synchronization. And if changes are made directly to the server over an SMB connection, those also sync to the devices. This is what a single server topology would look like. Our file server has the role enabled. The file server must be domain joined. Of course, clients do not need to be domain joined because the whole point is that we're going to be able to support personal devices. Both the client and the server do require NTFS storage. And the reason we have an NTFS requirement is we're taking advantage of some new change detection and notification capabilities in Windows 8.1. Devices that are outside of the network environment come through a reverse proxy, or it could even just be a firewall rule. They connect over a secure SSL connection. Clients inside the firewall can connect directly to the work folder server. They still use SSL. Or if you want, you can route them to the proxy if you want all of your devices connecting through a single aggregation point. Active Directory handles Windows integrated authentication for us inside the firewall using Kerberos, through the firewall using Digest, and optionally, we can take advantage of Active Directory federation services. I have a session tomorrow afternoon at 5 with Sam, one of the program managers in Active Directory, and we're going to talk a lot about ADFS and the intersection with work folders. So join us at 5 tomorrow if you want to know more about that. I will tell you briefly, there's three reasons to use ADFS with work folders. The first is to support multi-forest configurations while coming through the proxy server. Digest doesn't support multi-forest authentication. The second is multi-factor authentication. Whether you're using phone factor or some other multi-factor auth, work folders can take advantage of it through ADFS. And the third reason is so that you can restrict synchronization to just registered devices in your organization. A registered device can be a domain join device. It can also be a personal device that has done workplace join. And again, in the session tomorrow at 5 with Sam, we'll talk a little bit more about workplace join, and we'll show you how that works. In addition to restricting to registered devices, there are policies you can set on the server that ensure that the work folder's container on the client is encrypted. We take advantage of a new capability in EFS that's being released that lets us automate the process, that lets us assign the key to the organizational entity, and later gives you the ability to selectively wipe just the organization's data on that device, not the user's personal information. And of course, we have the simple capability to require a device lock and password. Because this is a file server, you get to take advantage of all the things file servers do for you today. We didn't build this as a separate function. We really built it as a new access protocol. So the things on the back end, like quotas and file screens, all the reporting capabilities that exist in the file server, and the ability to classify information and then use RMS to encrypt sensitive information so it can't leak out of your enterprise. are all available to you when you deploy work folders. Well, enough talking. I'm going to let Roy show you how to deploy work folders on a server.
Thanks again, Adam. What we have on screen is a new shiny Windows Server 2012 R2. I'm sure you've seen that before today in these sessions. This box is already configured with the work folders features. If you would want to do that on your own, you can go navigate to Server Manager and open the Add and Roles wizard. Scroll down to the File and Storage Services and find the work folder subrole over here. Great. Now let's assume you're the file server administrator for Contoso. You get an email from Sally, who's the manager of the sales team. She tells you that she talked to Paul. He told her how good our work folders are, and she wants you to enroll that functionality for her team as well. So to do that, you go to Server Manager, find this new canvas appropriately named Work Folders, and kickstart a new SyncShare wizard. The first bit of configuration that you have to provide is the location, where those files are going to sync to. You can either use existing SMB share, or in our case, just create a new folder. You can also pick the default naming convention for the user's folder. We'll just use the alias. And you can also decide what kind of subfolders you want to sync. In our case, we'll use all subfolders. The description and title are pretty good enough. And in this stage, you also want to decide which users are going to be mapped to that sync share. Yes, a question. So the question was whether we can share two directories for a single sync share. And the answer is that for this release, we're just focusing on one specific directory.
Yeah, and just to add something, it's specifically the user's individual data. There's not an option, for example, that there's a team share and you want everybody to synchronize that same data. We do not support that in this release. It's the user's home directory, home share, yes. Does it find the home share through Active Directory? The question is it the home share defined in Active Directory? You can make it the same. It does not consult the home folder entry in Active Directory for each individual user. We're going to talk a little bit later about where we do use Active Directory, but once we find a sync share's location, all the users that sync to that share are going to be subordinate to that directory.
Back to the demo. So we picked the location of the files where they're going to sync back on the file server. Now we have to pick which users are going to sync to this specific sync share. We can do that by using security groups, either existing security groups that you already have, or creating new security groups just for this purpose. We'll use the sales security groups for this sync share. And the last stage is to define and decide what kind of policies would be applied on any device that participates in this syncs session. For this case, we'll just leave it as lock screen and require a password. That's it. The sync share was created. You can also verify that the configurations are correct by clicking on the sales sync share in the primary tile, looking at the path, the access group, and seeing the users for that specific share in the users tile. And at this point, you can send an email to Sally's team telling them that they can now start using their personal device to access their work files.
Now, Roy, I know Sally's team pretty well.
So do I.
Yeah. We've heard about the cat videos and other personal data that they like throwing onto their user shares. Is there something we can do to help restrict them a little bit?
Yeah. So some of you are probably already familiar with the quota settings that we can apply as part of the file server technologies. And to do that, we'll go ahead and go over to the file server resource manager. We'll, under quota, create a new or actually apply a new quota settings on the folder that we just created. We can have an option to pick the specific quota template. We have 5, 20, 50. What do you think we should use?
20 sounds about reasonable.
Okay. 20 gigs of cat pictures. And to make sure the quota is being set on the user's folder and not on the parent top-level folder, we'll use the auto-apply quota for subfolders. Any user that puts data beyond the 20 gigs, his client would show him an error that he has more files than he should, and he should clear those files to continue on working with his work folder.
Thanks, Roy. So I forgot one thing. I think at the beginning I promised that there were some Xbox Live Gold memberships for anybody who could tell us what we did in this demo that we didn't do in Nir's demo and Bill's demo yesterday. Anybody from yesterday's session have a guess? Yep, where we set the quotas, correct. So you get an Xbox Live Gold membership that you can activate whenever you want. See me at the end and I'll arrange to get it to you. And I let a little time pass, but the first demo I forgot to ask. Does anybody remember? It's a tough one since we've been talking since.
Maybe we'll give them a chance later on.
Yeah, maybe we'll give you another chance. Oh, somebody remembers? A question. Let's go ahead with the question then. Can the share be on DFS? No, the share cannot be on DFS. We need a single sync server to serve the files for an individual sync share and sync end user. There's other ways to achieve fault tolerance, and you could certainly use DFS if you wanted to, for example, bring data in from a branch office in a read-only way. You could do that, but for active sync activity, at least for this release, we need it to go to a single server for a particular user on a particular sync share. So the question is, what happens on the client side if they don't have enough storage available? We have two different behaviors. If it's a system drive, we leave a threshold of available free space. And when we get to that point, we will stop sync with an error, letting the user know that they're out of space. We don't want to fill up their system drive. If it's on a data volume, we actually will consume all of the space. But once it's consumed, again, we'll have a sync error. Sync error will tell them that they're out of space, and it's up to them to reduce the space usage. Yeah, so the question is, how did we get the other user in sales? So we picked a group, and the group was pre-populated with multiple users. So any of the users in that group will automatically be able to sync to that sync share. So it wasn't that it was from a previous demo. It's just showing us in Server Manager. Yeah, exactly. From the AG group, it's just enumerating, and each user becomes a valid user on that sync share. Why don't we hold off on the questions for a little bit, because there's a bunch more content that will probably address some of the questions. And I'll continue to take a few as we go in case there's anything that's not clear as we do it. But let's leave the other questions towards the end. I want to take you behind the scenes. You saw how to set up a client. You saw how to set up the server, how sync shares work. But how does a file actually stay in sync? Here I have a single file server with work folders enabled and two devices that belong to the same user. First thing I have to do is establish this sync partnership, what we showed in the first demo. When you establish a sync partnership, it creates a data directory, on any NTFS volume on that device. That's where work folders will be located. And then we also have a hidden, not in that directory, it's in the user profile, version database that we use for tracking the metadata that we require to track versions of files and make sure that we keep files in sync across devices. And we also have a staging directory. This is another hidden directory that the user won't encounter. And we use the staging directory as a way of getting a file from the file server and completing the transfer and not having to worry about can we apply that file to the data directory at that instant in time. On the file server, when the sync share is already set up, The first time a user syncs with any one of their devices, and this only has to happen once per user, the server will provision corresponding infrastructure, a data directory for the user. In the case of a server, it has one database for the sync share, so you don't get a new database, but you get a new set of tables in that database for that particular user, and an upload staging directory, which is used just like the download staging directory on the client. This when a client sends a file up to the file server. We then detect some local change on a client. It could be a change to an existing file. It can be a deletion of a file or the creation of a new file. The client initiates a connection to the server and uploads that file to the upload staging directory. Now the file's there, regardless of what happens with the rest of the sync session. The server has a copy. The server will then, independent of the client, try to apply it to the data directory. When it applies to the data directory, it's possible the file is in use. And if the file is in use, the server can just maintain the file in the staging directory until the file is closed. We set up permissions when we configure the sync share to make sure that everyone can sync without any problems, but someone can go in and muck with the NTFS permissions. And if they do, and we can't apply the file while we're impersonating the user on the server, we'll generate a sync error, which will be exposed to the client on their device in work folders. The permission error gets resolved, and then the server can successfully apply the file to the data directory. There's one other thing that the server needs to do when it applies that file, which is make sure there isn't a version conflict. What happens if the file got edited on multiple devices? Many of you are familiar with offline files, and I'm sure you love the pop-up that asks you right then to resolve the conflict without a lot of information about what's in each file. So since you love that feature so much, we took it away. And instead, we silently resolve the conflict the way most sync applications do, including SkyDrive. We have two principles: don't lose any data, and don't annoy the user. So the conflict file is created, and we make the current file the latest one. So there are two files that are edited in the same interval, but one is slightly newer than the other. We'll use the newer one. Or imagine a device goes offline for months with a changed file and then comes back. We'll always keep the newer one, whichever it is, the server copy or the client copy. And the older version keeps the original name, and then we append the device name on which the conflict originated, in this case the client, not the server, and we append a number if we need to if there are multiple conflicts. Sync can then be initiated by a second client that already had its partnership set up. Sync would be initiated by that client for one of two reasons. Either that client had a change we detected, or its polling interval expired. The polling interval by default is every 10 minutes, but we do let you configure that interval if you'd like to change it to be more or less frequent. In either case, the second client checked in with the server, and the server said, "I have a new file for you." So the client downloads it. Where does it put the file? In its staging directory. And then it goes through the same process that the server went through of applying the change to the data directory and goes through conflict resolution on the client if conflict resolution is required, if the file changed in multiple places. Three things to take away from this. A client, as we discussed based on one of the earlier questions, is limited to a single partnership per user. Work folders in this release is built around accessing your individual user data. Different users on the same device can absolutely use work folders for their own data. The client always drives sync. Don't expect the server to initiate a sync session. You'll wait forever. And the change applier, which could be a client or a server, is always responsible for handling conflict resolution. But the conflict file retains the name of the device on which the conflict is actually generated. You might be thinking, sync is nothing but SMB tunneled in HTTP. You'd be wrong. We built a new protocol that's designed specifically for sync, that's designed to be firewall friendly, that's designed to be efficient at synchronization over a variety of network performance characteristics. By default, our clients will insist on connecting over SSL to a server that has a properly signed certificate. Properly signed is critical because we don't want clients connecting to rogue servers that are impersonating you and sending their data to them. So the SSL certificate is used for authenticating the server as well as for encrypting the communication. If you want to do a self-signed cert for evaluation of work folders, you can do that, but you have to import cert on the sync server as well as the client, so the client will fail to connect. If you'd like to terminate SSL at the edge in your network environment, you can do so by configuring your proxy with the same SSL cert and having the proxy convert to a port 80 communication with our sync server. And even for your clients that are in your network environment, not coming through the firewall, if you want to, you can configure them to go through the reverse proxy, do the same termination, and now you can do full packet inspection for all of your clients wherever they happen to be connecting from. There is a trick. There's a registry setting that will let you enable HTTP on the client. You have to be an admin to allow it. It is a useful trick for internal testing when you're getting started. I wouldn't put sensitive data in work folders using HTTP, again, because you could connect to any server that's impersonating you. So I've talked about the fact that we have a data set, and we also have a database, which presents a problem that we had to solve of making sure that the database that reflects the versions of the files doesn't go back in time. Sync is really hard to do if the database goes back in time. For those who are also Active Directory administrators, you'll know that you have a similar situation with Active Directory, making sure that its database never goes back in time. The first thing that you might want to do is just a selective file restore. A user deletes a file and wants it back, corrupts a file, changes it in some way, wants an older version back. You can always do selective file restore, whether on the client or the server, and not involve our database at all. What you get back is a file that we see as the latest change to that file. We don't care what the timestamp is because we're actually watching the changes happen. We know that that old file is the latest version you wanted. And we sync it to the server and to the other devices. Or if you've done the restore on the server, down to devices. For client recovery, we make sure that we exclude our database from backups using the well-known do not backup key. So a well-behaved backup application should not backup our database nor restore it. But as a caution, if you do full client system recovery, I would test it. And we'll provide documentation on making sure that the database is not coming back with the data set. And we're also doing some work to see if we can make that completely foolproof and detect when that happens and discard the database. The client has the ability to reconstitute its database based on the files that are restored and based on the database that exists on the server. So that's how we get the database back on a client after full client recovery. On a server, we do provide a VSS writer so that you can do full system recovery in the event of a disaster. You don't want to reconstitute the server database because it would be very taxing on the server to reconstitute for every user that's syncing with a particular share or all the shares on that server. The VSS writer makes sure that we don't suffer that problem of going back in time. And what you want to make sure of is that when you do a full server recovery, you don't treat those files as the latest version and overwrite newer information that's on the clients. You want the clients to upload any changes they have that are subsequent to when you did the full server backup. And part of what we do with the VSS writer is exactly that. We make sure the database rolls forward, and later changes, be they additions, changes, or deletions, all replicate in or sync in from the clients to the server. So we've talked a lot about end-to-end security. We've talked about pieces of it throughout the presentation. And I want to tie it all together, because one of the things we really wanted to deliver to you in WorkFolders is an easy-to-secure solution that helps you comply with your governance requirements. So to summarize, it starts with the sync share permission, which is the gateway to synchronization for the client. NTFS permissions on the server, of course, are obeyed. All of our communications are encrypted. We give you the ability, optionally, to encrypt the container on the devices. It's not a server function. This is a device function. And we let you encrypt the container on the device that stores work folders, and then selectively wipe all of the enterprise data, not the personal data, off of that device. Enforcing a password, making sure that device is locked after a period of time. It's a basic security requirement. We talked a little bit about limiting to registered devices, and I talked earlier about the fact that those can be domain-joined devices or non-domain-joined devices that have done a workplace join. There's an interesting capability that provides to you if you're limiting to registered devices, which is when you do the workplace join, ADFS can challenge you for multi-factor authentication. If WorkFolders then insists that you have a registered device, WorkFolders essentially gets seamless multi-factor authentication without having to prompt you again by trusting the registration certificate that was installed on the device during the workplace join. Now, of course, you can optionally use ADFS to require multi-factor authentication for WorkFolders with or without registered devices. But we think it's a really neat capability to have multi-factor auth without prompting the user for the multi-factor auth that second time. One of the hardest things to do from a security perspective is preventing someone from taking a file with sensitive information and sending it in email or any other mechanism to someone who shouldn't have access to it. And in a minute, Roy's going to show us how we help solve that problem. And finally, anti-malware on the server gives you a choke point. As you allow non-domain joined devices, non-managed devices into your enterprise, which might not have appropriate anti-malware on them, you can make sure that viruses don't spread from those devices to other devices. Roy, let's take a look at how you're going to help us protect data in WorkFolders.
Thanks again, Adam. So back at Contoso, you, as the file server admin, get a call from your CIO, and he tells you, hey, this WorkFolders is really great. It boosts up productivity. However, he's somewhat concerned that it might cause some documentation or documents to leak out, especially from the personal devices. Luckily for you, you can use existing file server technologies to mitigate that concern. The first one would be to auto-classify files that contain specific keywords. And the second one would be to RMS encrypt those files. Let's see how you get there. So we're back again at File Server Resource Manager. The first step is to create a rule that looks on the work folder's location. And whenever there's the word confidential in the document, it applies or sets a value to a property named impact with the value equals high. Okay, so any file that gets uploaded to the file server will parse that file, and if the word confidential is mentioned there, it will just apply impact equals high. The second functionality is to use a file server task, again, that runs on the same scope of work folder's content, that applies RMS encryption to those files, only in the case where that document has a property named impact and the value equals high. Okay? Let's see how this runs, how everything works together. So back again to Paul. Even though Paul is part of the finance group, he has IT administration aspirations. So in his free time, he likes to draw network topologies. And he knows this deployment is sensitive, so he adds the word confidential to one of his slide decks. He then copies the file to his work folders. The file gets uploaded to the server. It gets classified. The file server parses that file and sees that the word confidential shows there. It applies the impact equals high property and then kicks in the second stage, which actually encrypts that file. Now, the clients know that there's a new version on the server, so they pull that new file version. So, for example, on the surface, if you'll try to open that file, and again, the surface is a reminder, the surface is a non-domain join machine, that's his own personal device, he'll have to provide a username and password to decrypt that file. You can see that this file is tagged as high impact data. On the other side, on his office PC, which is domain joined and he has all of his credentials, he'll just open the file. He won't need to provide his username and password, and it can still work as it worked before. That's it.
Great. And I see that even on his work machine, he's still warned that it's high impact data. So at least he has that intentional sensitivity to what kind of document he's working on. Anybody notice anything we did here that Bill didn't show us yesterday? One more Xbox Live Gold membership up for grabs. I'm sorry? We showed RMS. We did show RMS, I think. Bill's shrugging. Bill, we did. Anything else? You want to tell them what the answer was, Roy?
Yes.
Aha,
yes.
File Server Resource Manager. See
just
me after
in
the
time.
Session for your Xbox Live Gold Pass. Everything we've talked to up till now is about a single server deployment. But there's a variety of reasons why you may want to have multiple servers in your environment. You might have enough sync users that you exceed the capacity of a single file server. And we provide you with the ability to scale out work folders across multiple servers. You may have branch or regional offices, and you want users to sync to those servers instead of all coming back to a central location. Or perhaps you delegate file server administration to departments, and each department has its own server with its own admin. And finally, you might have requirements for compliance that force you to physically separate data across multiple servers. Being able to support multiple servers raises some challenges for us. First, we have to help you find the right server. And we want to keep it really easy for the end user and give you a tool to easily migrate users between sync servers. In a multi-server deployment, that poor user is sitting there on his device, wondering, like I asked earlier, what's my URL? And you saw the answer initially, that they enter just their email address. And again, we use email address because it's something the user knows. It has nothing to do with their email account. The device connects over that URL. Tries to find out which server it is. And DNS can respond with one or more sync servers in the environment. In this case, I have sync 1 and 2 in headquarters, sync 3 in a branch office, and we've decided to publish only the addresses for sync 1 and sync 2 in DNS, and we're using round robin DNS to help load balance the discovery requests. In our example, sync 1 is returned. The client then sends the discovery request to the server through the reverse proxy. And in this case, it is SYNC1's responsibility to check Active Directory. We have one schema extension that's required for auto discovery to work in work folders. If you don't want to use auto discovery and you want to distribute individual URLs, you don't need to make the schema extension. This schema extension does not require you to upgrade Active Directory. So we hope you'll take advantage of the auto discovery capabilities. In this case, SYNC 1 finds that Joe's SYNC server is SYNC 3. So naturally, it returns to the client, SYNC 3, says that's your SYNC server, not me. The client will then use SYNC 3 as its SYNC server for as long as it works. If it ever doesn't work, the process repeats. Auto discovery kicks back in, and Joe's work folders client will automatically find him his new sync server. There's a question before I go on? Yeah, so the question is, does each server have a copy of the list? Do they know where users go? It's actually a little simpler than that. Any of the sync servers can consult Active Directory for an authenticated user and find out what their sync server should be. So the DNS publishing is just a way of you deciding which servers are going to act in a discovery capacity. But really, any sync server that's contacted has the ability to say, you're not supposed to sync with me. I'm going to check Active Directory and tell you where to go. And this all happens very quickly and automatically when the client connects. Another question? The question is it based on the user properties or sites and services? It is based on the user property. The schema extension that we ship with work folders creates one new attribute for the user. The attribute is up there, MSDS sync server URL, and that's the one and only one place we need to look in Active Directory to find out where to direct the client.
Did you say it requires an AD?
I did say it requires an AD schema extension for just that one attribute.
Oh.
Yep. And it does not require you to have the latest Active Directory, so you don't have to upgrade Active Directory to 2012 if you haven't yet. Yeah, the question is, are there any inherent file size limits? There's one that's a configurable limit. We default to 10 gig max per file. We don't have a theoretical limit on file sizes or even the size of all of the work folders. You can configure using quotas how big work folders can be per user. That's up to you. And then, of course, also limited based on the capacity on the device. Okay. Was there another question? Yep. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Yeah, so the question is, what happens if the connection breaks between synchronization? So the first thing I want to point out is that we don't maintain a connection. Synchronization is asynchronous, short-lived sessions for the purpose of sending files that have changed on the client and getting any files that the server has that are new or changed down to the client. And then the sync session is terminated. We're not holding those sessions open. So between sync sessions, there's actually no concept of breaking a connection. During a sync session, we can certainly have a connection break, and we're resilient to that. And we'll do smart things. It's part of the reason we have a staging area. We can keep, you know, whatever files we've got into the staging area remain there, don't have to be uploaded or downloaded again, and we can continue where we were. Another question?
Do you always move the full file?
Do we always move the full file? It's a great question. We don't want to always move the full file, but in this release we do. Yeah. Another question? Yeah, Okay, so the question is, in addition to quota policies, do you have content policies? You can use file screens on a server just like you do today. And if a device has a file of a particular type that you don't want to allow, it will be blocked from being uploaded to the server.
It's also worth mentioning that the client itself will get an error saying you cannot upload this file. So the client can solve the problem on its own without calling the file server admin or the help desk.
So the question is, could there be scenarios where SYNC 3, our branch office server, is not internet connected? You absolutely could have such circumstances if you don't want to allow people on SYNC 3 to sync from the internet. So if you want them to be able to sync from anywhere, you have to publish not just the proxy, not just the discovery servers, but all the SYNC servers you want people to connect to have to be published through reverse proxy, which is as easy as publishing any website, like SharePoint, for example. I'm sorry, again? Yeah. Do we have a notion of slow link detection? We don't do anything specific around slow links. We do respect metered connection policies on the device so that a user doesn't get a surprise bill because of synchronization happening magically in the background. But if a connection is slow, we'll tolerate it. But we don't do anything to throttle it back. The question is, when you go through reverse proxy, I think you're asking if you want to terminate SSL there, do you have to do the trick in the registry to allow HTTP? No, you don't, because the trick is only for the clients. And the client is still connecting to the proxy server over SSL. The SSL connection gets terminated, and the only in the clear connection is between your proxy and your sync server. Yes? Yeah, other clients besides Windows 8.1. The initial priority for us is making sure that we have sync for Windows 8.1 when it releases. Our immediate next priority, which will ship shortly after 8.1, is to make sure that Windows 7 in your organization and those iPads that you're getting requests to support can use work folders. So there will be an app for iOS. Our priorities beyond that include Android, but that's a later stage. Yeah, to the best of my ability, Windows 7 doesn't have workplace join. I would recommend that for the details of workplace join, go to one of the sessions that addresses that more directly. One place to get that is in that session tomorrow at 5, where we'll talk about work folders in combination with ADFS. I can make sure to check how we might deal with down-level devices before the 5 o'clock session, so I'll promise to have an answer for you. One more in the back, and then we'll pick it up, and we'll take more questions at the end. Yeah. So the question is, how do you handle devices with different storage capacities? Unfortunately, the device with the lowest capacity is going to be the one that is the limiting factor for the end user. Other devices will continue to sync beyond the capacity of the lowest capacity device, but there's no guarantee about which files the user may want on that device that has lowest capacity. So when we get to that limit, we're just going to stop syncing on that device. That may be okay for the user, or there may be some files that are more important, in which case they should remove some less important files from that device. So for this release, that's the solution. Okay, let's continue, and again, we'll have a little more time at the end for questions. So many of you have already told us, as we walked around at the beginning, that you're using home folders or folder redirection, possibly both. Our first priority was to make sure that we have server-side compatibility so that you can use work folders on new devices and continue to use home folders or folder redirection on legacy devices. And I think you've seen clearly that as we come in over an SMB connection using those older devices, file changes on the server, it will still sync to the clients. That interoperability was our first priority. You also technically can run work folders on the same device as home folders or folder redirection. There is nothing about the combination that should be technically problematic. And we've been using it that way on our own devices and our own tests. But we don't recommend it. And the reason we don't recommend it is the user could mistakenly think that they have redundant copies of the same data. They say, it's in my work folders. I no longer need it in my documents, and delete it from my documents. And if it's redirected to the server, it's the server copy you're deleting. And then it deletes down to the other device. So it's a really problematic user education problem that we just don't think there's an easy workaround for. So we recommend that you migrate devices to work folders and don't co-locate it with previous technologies. What you may want to do is map to your existing directory structure. On your server, if you're using folder redirection, you may, let's say you're redirecting my documents, my music, my pictures, and favorites. And they all sit under the user alias directory. Roy showed you earlier that you can choose the alias to map to the existing standard folder redirection configuration. If you weren't mapping to an existing configuration, you might want to use the other option, which is the user at domain. The advantage of user at domain is that you get a guarantee of uniqueness across domains. But if you're mapping into an existing environment, you're going to want to use the existing directory structure. And furthermore, if you had music, pictures, documents, and favorites, doesn't really make sense to put favorites in work folders. Then you have two different places on your machine with favorites. What we did is created a single container for work documents. So you're going to want to specify that you want to sync the documents subdirectory beneath each user directory to work folders on the devices. If you're migrating from another server, so let's say you have a server set up today, you deploy 2012 R2, you deploy work folders on it, you have clean, empty directories. You can migrate the data on the server side if you're comfortable with all of that data coming over to work folders and then syncing to devices. That works. But we have a suggestion. If you worry that that My Documents directory that someone was using is a commingled mess of work data and personal data, I know the first thing I do in My Documents at work, I create a personal directory. I bet some of you do too. So you can set up work folders with empty directories, keep the existing My Documents, and tell users what's happening. That now you put something in your work folders, and you get it across all your devices, not just Windows devices, and not just while you're connected to the network. This is great for you. And it also helps you easily separate your work data from your personal data. Just do a drag and drop on the client side. And then when you remove folder redirection policies, their My Documents only has personal data. And their work folders has all their work data. So we think that's a useful way to migrate from an existing environment and help users create that separation. Does that seem valuable? Great. The last type of migration is moving users between sync servers. And when I talked about auto discovery, all the answers to how we handle migration between sync servers were there. You update the Active Directory user property in preparation for the migration. Nothing changes when you do that. Just the Active Directory property ready. You then change which sync group the user's in. And on their very next sync session, they try to connect to a sync share on a sync server. And that sync server knows you're not in this group. It consults Active Directory, finds the new sync server, returns it to the client. Your clients are seamlessly, instantly migrated to the new server. As our final demo, I'm going to have Roy take you through some of the capabilities in File Server that you can apply to work folders for monitoring and reporting.
Thanks again, Adam. So we talked about different life cycles of this product, mainly in the creation and the configuration. For ongoing day-to-day support and operations, one of the most common functionalities is to understand what kind of devices a user has, when was the last time they synced, and so on. to get to that, and let's say we want to find Paul's devices, we'll pick the appropriate sync share, and we'll look for Paul from the users tile. And through the properties, we can get that information about his devices, the last attempt that he wanted to sync, the device operating system, and so on. This is through Server Manager. You can also get the same information from a partial commandlet. You can use get sync share user status with the user and the sync share. Run that through and get even more detailed information. This is also a good opportunity to show you that we have all of these functionalities provided as partial commandlets. So everything that we've seen today and even more can be automated, put into script, and be used. That was for the day-to-day operation, but what happens if you want some more of a statistical view of the files, of the content, of the sizes? For that, you have different options. One is to use the storage reports capabilities in FSRM. And if you guys have file servers in your org, you probably have this already enabled. You can get information from here, such as duplicate files, files by owner, files by type, and so on. And it will just work on workgroups as it works on SMB and NFS shares. But if you want more specific work folders information, every successful sync session that completes, we log a record in the event logs under the sync share channel, specifically under the reporting subfolder. Now, if you have System Center, Operations Manager, you can use the reporting capabilities to hook to those events, pull them in, and use them to generate reports. But if you want something simpler, you can also use, again, a PowerShell commandlet that just dumps those events, converts those to a CSV, and stores them in a file. Then you can just kickstart an Excel worksheet, use that data as a raw data set, and create really interesting pivot charts and pivot tables. One interesting example is the files per server. This chart reports out that, screams out that work folder one is not balanced with the other servers, so you might consider taking some of the sync shares over here and migrate them to other servers, as Adam described before. Another interesting one is the file distribution over time. Again, we see that work folders one take a higher load among the other servers, so that might help you plan up ahead from a storage and file server capacity planning. The point is that you have all of this information in the data set, and you can extract and generate whatever reports that you want based on these details. Yes?
Is there a way to see which files were downloaded? Like, if I wanted to know that this person downloaded a high-impact file, so if that file somehow ended up, I could go back and look through and say, Dave downloaded this file, and then he's likely the source of the link.
So the question was whether there was a way to show specific files and when they got downloaded. With this configuration, you can't. There are some advanced properties that you can get extra logging. For cases when a file didn't sync down, you get an event, an error event in the event log, and you can see which files the user tried to download and failed.
Okay. Thank you, Roy. So just some key takeaways from the session today. Hopefully you see this as incredibly simple to deploy, to use, and for you to manage. We're fully leveraging absolutely everything we do in File Server. So all of those capabilities you take advantage of today on your SMB shares extend to work folders. You have the ability to empower your employees to be productive on the devices they want to use from wherever they are while remaining in compliance with your organization's data requirements. And I think most importantly, you can solve the problem of user data sitting on end user devices in a place where it's not managed and protected, a place where if the user leaves the organization, the only copy of the data goes with them, by giving them this powerful capability of work folders to let them do what they want. You'll have an easy tool for bringing data into a file server so that you always have a copy and you can always ensure that it's appropriately complying with policies. There's some other opportunities to learn more about work folders. I've mentioned a couple of times, one last plug, 5 o'clock tomorrow with Sam, we'll be talking about ADFS and work folders. I think the other sessions have already happened. There's a hands-on lab if you'd like to get a little time to experiment with work folders, and come see us tonight at the Ask the Experts at the Access and Information Protection booth. And with that, thank you for your time. Any final questions? Yeah, the question is there an option to, for example, delete content if a user hasn't synced within 30 days? We don't have an automated process for doing that in work folders, but again, you can take advantage of the capabilities on the file server, and you can take advantage of the logging we do to show you when the user last synced. And you could script the solution that says, here's the list of the users that haven't synced in some amount of time, and maybe you want to delete or archive the data associated with those users.
I can also add that just as we saw that we imply encryption on a specific file per condition, the condition would be that it wasn't modified for 30 days, and the action would be to move it to a different folder or scratch that out.
Yeah, so the follow-up question was that if a device is stolen, you could easily get access to the data even if there's encryption. I would say it's certainly not easy to get access to the data with the encryption. It's strong encryption. With an appropriate amount of computing power and the desire to brute force attack the keys, if the data is encrypted on the client, you could theoretically get to it. You just have to break the password on the device. Yeah, and then it's true if you can. Yeah. So the solution is, when a device is lost, you want to do the selective wipe of the device. Yep. Yeah, it's a good request. And it's something we can think about as we work through the final pieces of this release and into the next release. Having the ability for the device itself to say, I haven't seen a server in a certain amount of time, I should delete the content on the device. Something we'd have to give some thought to.
And he can script a solution if that file is being managed by Intune. He can script a solution that gathers data from the file server, and if it hasn't changed for 30 days, just shoot out a remote wipe to that device. It can be done. It might require some kind of automation, but it can be done.
And Nir, if you want to step to a mic, feel free.
Absolutely. When a device is stolen, basically you can assume the data is lost for you. People can get to the data, and the only way that you can protect the sensitive data is to RMS encrypt it.
And one of the things we haven't mentioned, just by a show of hands, how many people have RMS deployed in their own environments? Yeah, just a few. So RMS is introducing an RMS online capability, where it takes away the burden of having to deploy RMS. You can subscribe to that service, make it much easier to take advantage of the capabilities Nir just mentioned, where you can make sure that if the device does fall into the wrong hands, and if Mark or someone else breaks the user password, that file is still encrypted using RMS credentials.
Adam, we still have 2 Xbox Lives to hand out, right?
I'm sorry?
You still have 2.
Yeah, that's true. We do still have Xbox Live. So I'm going to retroactively say the challenging question on encryption is going to win an Xbox Live subscription. And we've got one more to give out. So we'll pick another question as it comes in. Yeah. So the question is, if it's a smaller device and it runs out of space and you delete content, how does it not delete from other places? So the answer is, you don't just want to delete the data, you want to move the data somewhere else. So think of work folders as the place that you're going to put the content you want to get to from all of your devices. If you have a device with space constraints, you're going to use that as your guideline for what goes in work folders. And other data presumably could sit on a file server doesn't have to sync to the devices. It's old, it's archived. So the question is, are we smart enough to determine that it was that this was the user's intention to say it in a different way? If the user moves the content elsewhere, we are going to delete it from work folders on all of their devices. And whatever that other location is now, you know, call that their archive location. For their old data, they don't need it on all of their devices. So I'll go back to the example where you had user home folders. You had a documents directory that syncs to all the devices. You could create another subdirectory that doesn't sync called old documents. And you could use that on the server for the things you don't need to get to from your devices. So are we smart enough? Yeah, we see it as a move. We move it out of work folders. It is now in the one and only one place you moved it to.
That was a pretty good question, right?
That's a pretty good question. So if Roy's impressed, then you get an Xbox Live Gold subscription. So the question is, what's the best practice related to storage on the server? And it's kind of an easy answer from the perspective of best practice is there's only one configuration that works in this release, which is the storage configured on the file server. So we do not let the sync server talk over SMB to a remote file server. If you want to use that remote file server as your storage location, then just enable the sync share on that server. Something we're thinking about for a future release, should we support those kind of topologies? And the earlier question we got related to DFS namespaces is similar.
But maybe to clarify that, you can still publish an SMB share on that content. You can just use that as a backend storage. So you have one server that has work folders on it, and you can create an SMB share on that. Right.
Correct. Right. Yeah, and back in the UI, when you pick, Roy showed you with typing C:\, whatever it was, he actually could have picked an existing SMB share to point the sync share to as well. So if you have one, you can point sync share to the same place, but not a remote one, an SMB share on that server. And to Roy's point, if you create it locally and then later decide you want SMB access to it, you can do it as well. Connecting from a sync server to a remote SMB share is something that we have to think about for a future release.
Cat pictures. Maybe I'll shut that.
Yeah. Yeah, Roy's going to bring it back up so we can actually see it. But while he does that, the simple answer is you get to choose that all of the users' directories on the server are going to be synced to their work folders or a particular subdirectory. And you can give us a path beneath the user directory, like documents, and then only that folder will sync to the devices. So you get to choose, and Royal shows.
So in this case, let's assume that we have the home folders for the engineering team, and we use an existing SMB share. We can go over here and say, just sync the documents folder underneath their home folders.
Another question? Does implementing this affect your ability to use dynamic access control? Do you know on the server, dynamic access control is still going to do what dynamic access control does. I think the question you're asking is, yeah, so you're only going to be able to sync what you have access to your devices. So in that sense, it respects it. question is, again, can you specify which devices? Okay. So luckily enough, we have the dynamic access control expert in the room, Nirvin Singh.
So the answer is that it's not going to abide by the device policy. So if the we're using the local device, basically the HTTP connection ends and we're impersonating the user on the server. So the server would be the device, and there would be no device claims in the token that's trying to access the data, and the access would fail for any device. Okay. Well, that's a great question. And
the question was, do we plan to address this?
Yeah, do we plan to address this? That's absolutely something that we can look at. We do have device information coming when we use ADFS. So in the future, we might be able to kind of consolidate the device information and allow you access there. That's a great question. It's an interesting engineering thing to do. Yeah.
Another question. Yeah, so two questions. Can the server be clustered? Absolutely. We support failover clusters with work folders. And the next question was about using DFS replication. You can use DFS replication to replicate to another server for read-only access. From a work folder's perspective, we need to have a single location which all of the user's devices sync to. So for example, if you had a branch office server and you wanted to enable sync on it, you can enable work folders there. And then you could use DFS replication to bring a copy of that data back to the headquarters location where it's backed up to some other media. That would be valid. So the question is, can you use just DFS namespaces? Work folders doesn't use DFS namespaces because it doesn't use SMB. So we're coming into an explicit server URL. We have to find a location that is a sync server. The sync server can point to a location that is also pointed to by DFS namespaces for SMB clients. But it doesn't work with the work folders client specifically. Correct. You can always have an SMB path with whatever namespace resolution you use to get to the server for SMB changes. Those changes will stay in sync on the devices. And then you have a work folder's set of connections from the user's devices over our new sync protocol to get to that same location. That is always direct.
There's a nice lady at the back that keeps her hand up for a while now.
How do you handle if someone is in two groups that are both enabled for sync folders, different sync folders?
So the question was, how do we handle a specific user that shows up in two different groups? It will just stay in the first group. If we want to explicitly tell him to sync to a new sync share, we'll have to remove them from the original group.
Yeah, how do you know which is the first?
So the question is, how do we define first? How do we choose one of the groups to sync from? Yeah. We do have an algorithm for picking, and I don't remember, so Nir is going to stand up again and tell us the algorithm for choosing which sync group.
The algorithm is not to be disclosed because it's very complex, but the main thing we make sure is that that user would get to only one place, and all its devices would always get to that specific place. All devices that you use, if you erroneously used, you know, defined it in 100 groups on the server, we would always get to the same place, and all devices would get to the same place. There will be no case where one device goes to one sync share and another device goes to another sync share. So all data is in one place. Now, since you define it in 100 places, you need to go find it. But that's, you know, yes.
So the best practice is to make sure that users are in a single sync group. If you get into the situation where they are in multiple sync groups, what Nir is saying is we will make sure that we don't split them across two sync shares. What the exact process is, we're not describing here. And perhaps we have to find some help for you to find. Actually, you could look at the...
You can use Server Manager,
Manager to find them.
To filter the specific user to see which sync share it belongs to.
Go ahead. So I think there are two questions. One is how do we find the appropriate users for a sync share and if we want to split across servers. And the other one is has to do with scalability. And I think I might be getting pulled off the stage. Someone tell me if I need to shut down. So the question about finding the users, you manage them by group. You tell us with groups of users that are logical in your organization which users should sync to an individual sync share. So we don't look at the directory structure and say, these are the directories we want to be able to do. You have to give us groups of users that we can map to a sync share. You can also put users on a sync share. We recommend doing it by groups. But if you wanted to assign individual users to a sync share, you can absolutely do that. And the other question is about your 50,000 users that are using this one file server. Yes, that would exceed the scalability limits that we hope to achieve in this release. We haven't finalized everything we're doing. But expect us to support thousands of users per server. This will vary based on the, how many thousands will vary based on the size of your server, and we'll have further scaling guidance closer to release.
This one? You mean to display?
If you clustered, it should increase it. It's failover clustering with active passive. So for any particular machine, you're still handling just that same number of users. So am I being pulled off stage? If someone can just tell me we need to clear the room. We do need to clear the room. So we've got a few people from the team here. We're going to step off into the back. There's four people who need to come see me for their Xbox Live Gold memberships. And anybody who's got questions will stick around as long as you want to chat. Thanks a lot for your time.